Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987. We're working on posting issue number 1,476 for VIP members as a digital PDF and all-text edition. Later today, there'll be a cover story on the Cruiserweight Classic, my Keller's Endnotes editorial, talking about what WWE did wrong on Monday night with the Cruiserweights, unfortunately. Plus my NXT House Show report, exclusive columns from Bruce Mitchell, his Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot, part one. Boy, does he know a lot about every wrestler in all of history when you read these Hall of Fame ballots, and he goes through the pros and cons of their Hall of Fame credentials. Also, Greg Parks with his comments and review of four of the non-A shows, so to speak, in pro wrestling over the last week, NXT, Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, and Impact, and also my newsletter exclusive reports on Raw and SmackDown with a full rundown of the show and comments on various segments and matches, along with the Torch Newswire with exclusive news, and also our Ringside Beat with live event coverage from in-person correspondents around the globe. 12 pages of content available as a PDF and all-text edition exclusively every week for VIP members. You can also subscribe to the paper copy of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter. I don't talk about this too much, because we're kind of in a digital era for most people, but some people still want to have that copy delivered to their mailbox, hold it in their hand, and not have to click around and stare at that screen. And if you're one of those people, we'd love to have you as a subscriber. And you can become a print copy subscriber. Weekly home delivery starts at 8 issues for $20. That's 2 months of home delivery for just $20. Go to pwtorch.com/paper copy. That's pwtorch.com/paper copy. It's that simple. And we'd love to have you as a subscriber. If you want to get the digital edition, though, the place you go is pwtorch.com/govip. That is pwtorch.com/govip. Well, it is a midweek flagship. We talk all topics in professional wrestling. We focused nearly exclusively on SmackDown last night. Pat McNeil, veteran Torch columnist, joined me on Tuesday right after SmackDown went off the air. And at the very end of the show, we did a little bit on some comments on Raw and the Clash of Champions. And then on Monday night, I was joined by Joel Dennell, a PWTorch.com correspondent. He does reports every week on Lucha Underground and has done some other features for PW Torch. He made his PW Torch audio debut to rave reviews afterwards. He did a fantastic job. Really enjoyed my conversation with him, and I encourage you to check that out, the Raw postgame show. Again, that went on the air as the closing credits to Raw were the proverbial closing credits, because WWE doesn't actually give credit to the writers or producers on it. But as the show was coming to an end, we went on the air live with Joel Dennell talking Monday Night Raw, and then we ended up talking about our attendance at the NXT matinee show on Sunday afternoon. Some pros and some cons to Joel and I in our first NXT experience in person, that is, and also talked about Lucha Underground, a show that he covers for PWTorch.com. Some pros and cons of that show, too. So check that out. Today, I'm pleased to be joined with my co-host, Travis Bryant of the East Coast Cast, the PW Torch East Coast Cast. And that show can be found on Wednesday nights live and on demand, 24/7, 365, at eastcoastcast.com. That is eastcoastcast.com. Travis, welcome to the midweek edition of the Livecast.
What's happening, Wade? Livecast audience, what up?
Things are going good. Good to have you. Travis, first question for you. Now, you watch Raw live on Mondays, right? You're not I'm going to watch YouTube clips and Hulu later. Like, you're all set up to watch Raw live in Austin.
That is right. That is correct.
Okay, this Monday, the future of civilization is at a pivot point with whatever happens in the Donald Trump-Hillary Clinton debate going head-to-head with Raw. First of a couple questions for you on that. Are you going to be watching the debate or watching Raw?
I'm going to be watching both.
Okay, fair enough. What will you pay more? So you're going to have two TVs, or are you going to be flipping back and forth?
No, I'll have the TV on probably for sure with the debate,
yeah,
and my tablet with the Sling TV watching Raw.
Ah, interesting. Because I wonder how many people are in your situation. I know people who don't, you know, people on the outside are like, oh, wrestling fans, they're just, they're morons, they don't follow politics. You know, they're not even aware there's a presidential election, all those stereotypes. But I think a lot of wrestling fans, especially when you look at the age demographics of who watches Raw, I mean, I think they're going to take a big hit on Monday. And the last 2 weeks, the ratings have been under 2.0. Two Mondays ago, a 1.88. And then this Monday, a 1.97. So a bit of a rebound. Do you, Travis, have a sense of what's going to happen to that Raw rating on Monday? For all the talk, we had a Game 7 back in the day, Boston Red Sox, New York Yankees at the peak of that rivalry, head-to-head with Raw. We've had, obviously, big Monday Night Football games, although viewership down on Monday for the Bears-Eagles game. I don't know that we've had something like this that I think could...
Wait.
Yeah, go ahead.
Everything is going to get destroyed on Monday.
That's the thing, yeah.
I mean, I think the pet channel, like the Animal Planet is playing the debate. Like, it's going to be on every channel pretty much. Not every, obviously I'm exaggerating, but it's going to be on more than just your normal three networks,
yeah,
you know, and in your major cable places. It's going to be everywhere. Everywhere.
What is, like, I don't even know what
America's
MSNBC going to
have
is going to be airing.
The regular might be playing it live. It'll be on every major cable, I don't even know how to, it'll be everywhere. It'll be everywhere. And everything's going to get, Monday's just a spectacle.
It is, and
I mean, this is a year in the making, all that crap.
It is a huge, huge moment. For so many reasons. So what's your prediction for the Raw rating, given that they did a 1.88 and a 1.97 the last 2 weeks? Put a prediction to this situation that you are saying is as big as it is.
I guess I'll go with the rating I actually predicted for this week that they far surpassed, and I think I said a one. Oh, somebody said under 1.6 or 9. I said no. I'm gonna say no, but 1.67 was my number. So I'll stick with that. I'll go with that again.
Yeah,
it'll drop.
I mentioned on the Wade Keller hotline last night for VIP members at the end. I think the number I threw out was like a 1.7, and as I said it, I was kind of thinking, I bet they could do under that. I think if you presented me with a 1.7 over under, I think I'd take the under on it. Yeah, I think it's going to do under 1.7.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think they have a chance to do a statistical 1.7, like, you know, 1.67.
Yep, I'm with you.
Something they can claim, but we'll do, 1.6, something, somewhere.
And this is the thing. I think it could even, I mean, I'm not ruling out that it's worse. And I don't want to, you know, because...
Yeah, 1.4, 1.5 or
something. If you look at the 1.88 rating and you go, they'll lose 10% of their audience because of Clinton against Trump. Well, that's not even that big of a deal. I mean, 1.88 minus 10% is 1.7. 1.7, you know, something. I think there's what's the floor, Travis? Not a prediction of what you would put your money on, but I think there's a chance of a 1.5 or a 1.48. I mean, I just don't know, and we could have a lot of fireworks between now and Monday that even add to this spectacle, a very important spectacle. I think it's the most important presidential election we've ever had, probably. But I think it could actually go much lower than 1.72. I mean, I that's in the range of possibility as far as I'm thinking.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
All right, our phone number here is... Do you have it memorized, Travis? Have you heard me say it enough? Without cheating?
No, and I'm not going
to... No, I'm not asking you. I just didn't know...
No, because I have reasons that won't go over well with the producers of this show.
Well, I don't even know what that means, but we'll communicate later on it, maybe. 515-605-9345. That is 515-605-9345. Give us a call. Talk to Travis Bryant of EastCoastCast.com. Travis, what is on your agenda for tonight's program? I know that you have in-depth production meetings about what you're going to talk about. That is, of course, standard practice here at the Torch. What's on your agenda tonight?
Well, we're asking actually for, you know, we get the audience to do the work for us now, kind of like...
That's a good way to go.
You know, Tosh.
It's like having other people.
Or At Midnight, you know. But we're doing a poll, and what was the best match of the week? And we gave four options, and that will probably be the headline, but that's definitely going to be a big talking point. And looks like Kota Ibushi versus TJ Perkins is winning, and we got to talk about Cruiserweight Classic and the fallout from that and the presentation on Monday Night Raw. And anything the callers want to get into. I mean, that's really is on my mind. It's some solid wrestling we had this week. And, the Usos continued heel turn for sure. And American Alpha, you know, that whole thing. So, yeah, some good stuff. Whatever, it's caller-driven, whatever people end up talking to us about.
EastCoastCast.com starting at?
6:30 Eastern.
6:30 Eastern. And you can vote in that poll. On Twitter right now, we've got it retweeted at PW Torch. You can follow us at PW Torch. You can follow me at The Wade Keller. And Travis, plug your Twitter and your show's Twitter, whatever you want to plug.
You can follow the show at East Coast Cast. And I suppose you can follow me at Travlord.
you're half-hearted about that, I know. You only want cool people who are going to make your Twitter feed improve your mood, not cause you to be in a bad mood, right?
Totally.
Yeah, exactly. All right. You're talking about your best match of the week poll is a good lead-in for our first commercial break of the hour. And then we'll come right back and start taking calls, 289 and 718, the first two on deck. Give us a call, 515-605-9345. We also have some emails waiting for us at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com with some good topics. We'll get to those as this hour progresses. You can add to that email inbox, a list of good topics and questions by sending right now if you're listening to us live at 1:12 Eastern on Wednesday, September 21st, 2016. Send that email question to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. But speaking of the best match of the week, right now over at mmatorch.com, we've got our daily top five list up. The top five fights so far of 2016. If you're an MMA fan, check out this list from Jared Dodds and find out if you agree with his top five picks and his reasons for listing those as the top five fights of the year so far. We also at MMATorch.com have a new feature the last couple months, Daily Trivia, usually related to the upcoming weekend event, and that is what's going on this week with FS1 having another fight night. First time ever, a national broadcast or cable MMA UFC event headlining with a women's fight coming up this Saturday. But today's trivia question is about Roy Nelson taking on Bigfoot this Saturday. Interesting trivia question on him. We've also got news of the change in UFC's, or the hiring of UFC, a new matchmaker taking over for Joe Silva. We've got his backstory, and also in the story that I wrote on this yesterday on the site last night, when this news broke, a really interesting quote from the original. There's only been two, and there'll now be a third. Mick Maynard will be the third head matchmaker at UFC. The original matchmaker I interviewed back in 1995, Art Davey, and I had to pull this quote out to put in perspective how much the job of UFC matchmaker has changed over the decades. There's a great quote from my Torch Talk with Art Davey about what he did to find fighters for UFC fights. It's a very different world now compared to that. A very different job description in a lot of ways. A lot of similarities, but a lot of differences. Check that out. We've also got Nick Grinups, who's a tremendous new writer for MMATorch.com, with the top 10 fighters who have never competed in UFC. Who are those top 10? Plus, the enduring charm of the UFC heavyweight division and why it's still a gateway for many casual fans to become hardcore fans. Christopher King with his MMA Torch column on that. So much more good stuff. Go check it out, MMATorch.com. It's mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. Here's some more details on that, and then when we come back, your phone calls and email topics. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. And we are back. Travis Bryant of EastCoastCast.com is my guest, my co-host, I should say, on today's program. Tomorrow, one of the longest tenured pro wrestling announcers on the planet, Mick Karsh, finally returns to Interview Thursday. And we're going to talk about a lot of stuff with him. He still follows wrestling closely today. He still does announcing for independent promotion in Minnesota. He's done announcing for many independent promotions over the years. We're going to talk about that gig for him. He's also got something new going on in Pennsylvania, New Jersey coming up later this year, and he'll be talking about that. And he has done a little bit of everything in pro wrestling. He was a ring announcer for the AWA on ESPN in the 1980s. He has hosted a pro wrestling block in the 80s and 90s called Saturday Night at Ringside. He's done a lot of wrestling announcing and crossed paths with some of pro wrestling's biggest stars before they were stars, and and in many cases when they were already big stars. He's got great stories to tell. He goes all the way back to the 1970s when he was the president of the Nick Bockwinkel, the great Nick Bockwinkel, when he's a president of the Nick Bockwinkel fan club. He was a great writer, very funny writer, an early columnist for Pro Wrestling Torch, and also the newsletter he put out, the Bockwinkel Brigade newsletter, had some great content in the days before there was what's now become, you know, more traditional journalism covering professional wrestling, starting in the kind of mid 1980s with the Wrestling Observer, Wrestling Forum, Pro Wrestling Torch, Matt Watch, during the kind of newsletter boom period. The fan club bulletins were the way that wrestling was that people followed wrestling in different parts of the country, obviously way before the internet and podcasts. And so Mick is a great guest. He is always has great observations on what's going on today in wrestling. I know from his Facebook page, he's still watching every week. And so we're going to talk to him about indie wrestling, wrestling announcing, and the state of today's wrestling. So check that out. We also have a big guest I'm excited about for a week from Thursday. Not 100% confirmed, but close to it. Hopefully I can announce that tomorrow on the PW Torch Livecast Interview Thursday. Last Thursday, Kevin Nash was my guest, and it's definitely worth checking out. One of our most listened to shows in a while. Kevin Nash last Thursday with some blunt words about a variety of topics. So check that out. You can always find our shows on PWTorchLivecast.com or just subscribe to our RSS feed. Travis, let's take a phone call or two, and then I got some more topics to ask you about, and we'll also go to emails here at PW Torch Livecast. We'll begin with area code 289. 289, thanks for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, this is Synth from Toronto.
What's your first name?
Synth.
Oh, cool. All right, what do you got for us, Synth?
Yeah. Had a couple comments about both Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, definitely.
With Raw, I just thought, you know, you've talked about it a bit, how they approached the whole face turn with Seth, and I felt like a better approach would have been, instead of putting those, setting up where Roman's in the compromised position of being in a two-on-one, have it the other way around. Have Seth in that position and have Roman come help him out. Because, and just working within the framework of knowing that Vince does not want to turn Roman heel, which, you know, I agree with you guys on, it should be a thing that they should do. But sticking within that framework, I felt like it would have provided an opportunity to have Seth say to himself, like, man, like, I stabbed this guy in the back, and at the end of the day, when I got put into this compromising position, he came out to help me out. And it sort of creates that whole thing of, you know, I made the wrong decision to go with the authority, and now I'm realizing it. And I just think that makes, you know, more sense than, you know, the way they did it. And he helped him out. And then, you know, like, they're like, this is how much he wants to win the belt. And, you know, like you said in your review, it's like, that just doesn't make sense. Just wanted to, you know, first get what you guys thought about that.
Absolutely. Great topic. Travis, your thoughts on that?
No, that's a really, really good idea. It's just you can plug it in to Mondays. I guess you could, but that's something you probably would have to had thought about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, just to get the matchups right and things like that, but it's definitely an idea. And I don't think you would get hurt. I don't think Seth would be hurt by being saved by Roman, as far as like, oh, we would cheer normally in this situation, but it's Roman, so we're going to... I think they would just be glad Seth's not getting beat down and would go with it. You'd also have to have Roman climb the cage, like, you know, pretty quick. I don't know if he could do that.
there is that, yeah.
Sure, he could get up there. He's a fine athlete. But Seth, the whole point was to get up there and get an advantage and be able to punch those guys and keep them off you and then jump on them. So I can't exactly envision Roman doing that same spot, but tremendous idea.
I'll second that or third that. I love that idea. I mean, I think having Roman be the person who saves Seth, there's so many things, as Cynthia talked about, that work better in that scenario. I did dissect and critique and criticize the narrative the announcers took, you know, that Seth did that, you know, that he ran out to show how much he wanted the title. That doesn't make sense. If he wants a title, he should be sitting in the back getting a sports massage or sleeping at his hotel room by then. I mean, if you want the title, you don't put yourself at risk by running out to save a guy who you have no recent history of an alliance with. You know, let somebody else run out for the save.
Right.
And
wait, the psychology also, if you're thinking what gets the bigger pop, like they don't care that Roman's getting stomped into a, you know, a hole, but they would care that you were that Seth was getting so they definitely would pop for that getting stopped than Roman from getting him stopped from getting stomped out. So just based on the psychology of the reaction of the crowd, the initial reaction when whoever's music hits or whoever's in the ring at the moment getting beat up, just based on the psychology of that alone, yeah, I would reverse it and do sense idea.
Good thoughts. I agree there's some logistical issues that they'd have to plan ahead for, as Travis mentioned, but it would be a better end result. And it would put the fans in a position, you know, to want to admire Roman for being a stand-up guy coming to his friend's defense, and would also give Seth a reason for going further towards a babyface turn. I mean, Travis, that's part of the issue with and Seth, hold tight for one more second here. Travis, what do you think of the journey that they're on with Seth right now in terms of moving him from heel to babyface? Because you can argue there should just be a moment that stands out that Seth saw the light or he was triggered into changing his ways and then explains it afterwards. And then there's also the approach that you can take, which is it's a journey. That it's there's a moment here, a moment there, Stephanie saying the wrong thing.
And that was the approach I was in favor of
from
the beginning, from the even the real ideas that, oh, Seth really might have to turn baby now. And it was like, okay, well, if they're going to do that, they should take 2 months to do it at least. Like, he can't just, boom,
right,
go. Like, he did too good of a job. We were there in May. We saw that and heard that and were a part of that pop he got when he came out. And then the next night on Raw when he came out, before he then convincingly, and then for the next 4 months or however long it was, or, you know, whatever, summer, convinced the fans that he's a piece of crap. So he can't then just turn because someone saved him or, you know, kept him from, you know, disaster or this. No, that's not enough for us. A complete scumbag. That has to be something that he figures out in over the course of weeks. And this and Roman saving him totally is like a, like he's been leaning for 3 weeks, like, you know, I've been, you know, not being as much of a jerk lately, and you know, things have been against me, but that's just not enough for people to root for me. But bam, Roman saves me. Now the wheels are really turning. Am I really, you know, is this the legacy I want? Even if you want to introduce that kind of stuff, but, you know, go that route.
Absolutely. I totally understand the I totally understand that argument, and that it would lack. There's sometimes I just think you want to just get the chess pieces aligned where you want them, and go forward when you deal with injuries and you deal with unexpected situations. But if you can tell the story, and you know they got a lot of time to fill every week on these shows, and if they can tell that story competently and compellingly and bring the viewers, because hopefully Seth has done a good enough job to make people think he's a scumbag, that they're not just going to flip and start cheering him because he happens to wear different, you know, change jerseys, proverbially speaking. So I like that. So anyway, Seth, I want to go back to you. You can follow up on what we said about that, or you can move on to your second topic.
Yeah, I know. I agree totally with what you guys said. And, it's, you know, at this point, it's too little too late to do that. But, like I said, I agree. But the second thing I have is just two things about SmackDown. One was the thing I've been enjoying the whole Miz Daniel Bryan dynamic. And I just thought what they did this week was a little strange in that Miz made a huge deal of the whole contract renegotiation. But, all we saw in this one was that, you know, he actually, there was something in the contract that worked against him. And they didn't talk about, what did you actually get out of it? Was there more money? Are you, like, guaranteed more main event spots now? Are you only going to, you know, defend your title twice a year? Like, they didn't really get into that, and I thought that was a little strange. And the second thing was just, I totally agree with what you guys have been saying about how, you know, a lot of damage has been done to Jack Swagger, and the way they just, you know, from one night to the next, just completely try to turn him into somebody else completely. But with that being said, like, I think SmackDown is picking up steam every week, and they've just been really good at doing little things with each story to make it progress. And, I mean, I wouldn't put it on the level of NXT, but, you know, similar to that. And, like, I just liked how, you know, they did the promo. We got that, okay, this is a new thing now, like, try and view it with fresh eyes. And then this week, he wasn't too loud on the promo, wasn't trying to be extra or anything. He was just, you know, I'm here about the belt. And, you know, I agree that it's going to take some time to actually believe it, but just seeing the way SmackDown is going now, knowing that, you know, the seem to be a little bit more disciplined about how these stories progress. I don't know. I think he might do a little bit better now. So what do you guys think?
Who was the he?
Jack Swagger.
Jack Swagger.
Oh, still Tom. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, Travis?
Well. Yeah, I was the biggest Jack Swagger fan in, you know, 08, 09, whenever he first came in. I got over it. It's just like I had to get over the Wade Barrett thing, and it's just one of those, just, you know, what if kind of things for the rest of my life. Like, oh, was Jack Swagger, you know, didn't fall asleep at that one time or whatever kept him from being better. Not just, I don't want to make it seem like no management, but he just wasn't as good as he could have been.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2016. And, you know, he was ECW champion back
then.
Yeah, wait. You know, 2008, 2009. He was world heavyweight champion. But, I mean, it's going on. Is it going on 7 years? It's going to be like 7 years soon.
6 years, like 2010.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a long time ago. And he has been just mediocre. I mean, he has not grown as a performer, as a promo, as a wrestler. Yes, he fell asleep in the production meeting. But... it's more than that. I mean, of ultra-talented, ultra-motivated, totally immersed, wanting to be the best, that's not going to stick to him. You know what I mean? That there are other issues with Jack Swagger. He's just not. He's not a guy who has this passion for what he does. I mean, I'm not saying like that he doesn't care. It's just he doesn't have that top level passion. And people pick up on that. And when you have someone like Triple H, who's got influential, or who's lives his job, and you have Vince McMahon, who lives his job, they look for people who live their job and love what they do and want to get better. I mean, that was Shawn Michaels. You know, I mean, that was Steve Austin. If you want to get a big push in WWE, you can't just treat it like a job. You got to treat it like it's your life, even if that's an act you're putting up and you actually have some balance. You don't want to show that card to Vince McMahon or Triple H, and he has. And so, and other, you know, there's other factors. I mean, just he hasn't developed as an act in the ring, but it is ludicrous ludicrous, Travis, to job him out on Raw and then with the plan to have him debut as SmackDown, not as a jobber, but as a guy who's going to sit there with a straight face and talk about wanting to be world champion. I mean, I think that's one of the most dumbfounding things I've seen WWE do this year, and there's been a long list. But to have it go through their head of, well, we're losing this guy, he's going to SmackDown, so let's bury him by having him lose to Jinder. And then, I mean, I still can't get over it, Travis. What, is there any explanation?
Right, like the reason you put him against Jinder Mahal in that match is so he can beat him. And so, you know, like, oh, he's not been on TV for a while, but, you know, here's his finishing move, and here's his intro, remember, we the people. So it's like, are they trying to hurt? Like I get the rivalry between SmackDown, but you really want to hurt SmackDown? Like, is that the idea? Like, you want to send them tainted goods? Like, that's supposed to be a surface thing. Like, there's supposed to be, like, synergy, and it's one company, jackasses. Yes. Like, what are you doing? There is no other side of the country in this situation. There's no territory. It was stupid when they did it to Matt Hardy 12 years ago, or whenever that was, leaving SmackDown, so he's... does the job on the way out. It's like Bob Holly or somebody. And again, it's maybe I'm making that up, but I think it was to somebody like Bob Holly. But to somebody that it totally doesn't help. And this is even worse. Jinder Mahal, like, you beat Jinder Mahal. And then he goes to SmackDown. He does still does that terrible promo, has no credibility, because all he did was beat Jinder Mahal. But if he loses to Jinder Mahal, my Lord, that's just...
I know.
It's...
And here's
why?
The thing.
Why even show up on my TV?
And you've incorporated into your narrative that if you lose a lot, we'll talk about it, with Dolph Ziggler. So you got Dolph Ziggler, who's speaking the truth. I can't win the big one. You know, and then you have Jack Swagger show up talking about wanting to be world champion. Well, you can't ignore the fact that Jack Swagger hasn't won a match since, like, 2012. So you can't have him sit there on a headset and say he wants to be world champion. And Mauro Ranallo needs to look at him and go, but Jack, you haven't won a match in 4.5 years. I mean, of course, I'm exaggerating for effect, but, you know, how about you just win more than half of your matches for a few months against other mid-card wrestlers, and then we'll let you, without our jaw-dropping, talk about wanting a title? Because you have been the ultimate underachiever. That's the story to tell. That would resonate. And I know in WWE, they're like, we can't do that. We've got to create a version of the truth that Jack Swagger's a world championship contender, because we need him to be at the level of someone who might go after the IC title. You need to build that foundation. And that's the metaphor. You need, but it's applicable. You can't build a house without a foundation. And you can't build Jack Swagger as a world title contender without building the foundation. They need to write into the weekly storyline that he has been a loser and something happened that triggered him becoming a winner. And I know that's sort of the story they're telling with Dolph, but wrestling fans are savvy enough to know, hey, if you want us to believe anything about the stories you tell, you need to give a backstory that supports the story you're trying to tell me right now. And that does not exist with Jack Swagger fighting for any championship. And they need to respect their audience enough, Travis, to do it. You've gotten really into comic books this year, and there's no way a comic book would just take, and I know almost nothing about comic books, but I know enough to say this, there's no way that they would have that drastic of a shift in a comic book character without respecting their audience enough to build a foundation of a backstory to rebuild a character who, quote, loses all the time.
Or going, look, we're changing everything, but we're telling you we're changing everything, so shut up. We're doing a new universe or a new world or a third planet or some kind of dimensional rift or whatever. Yeah. But we're changing everything. So we're going from there. But typically that's just, from what I know, not very often, or maybe it is more often, I think, but they at least inform you that they're going to do it. But yeah, typically there's a happening, something happens. But wait, your point about Shane not watching Raw to know that Swagger's a loser was just, I mean, he's so perfect. Like, yeah, this dumbass doesn't even watch the show. So, of course, he doesn't even realize. And he doesn't even think, wait, that his contract expired. They didn't even want him. So, I'm snatching up Jack Swagger, but I don't even know that he's a... I don't even realize, because I don't watch the competition, that he lost to Jinder Mahal 15 hours ago.
Yeah.
Or whatever, I mean, it works out.
It's stupid anyway, that they're telling the story that, you know, like Stephanie and Mick Foley, like, we're all on Monday. We're all on a team together because ultimately our goal is to defeat SmackDown. Like, really? That's the narrative story you're telling? That, well, you're selling us on fights between wrestlers on the Raw roster and that they want to win the Universal Championship. They want to win the Women's Championship and the Tag Team titles. What really is in the back of their mind all along is, we're all in this together to beat SmackDown. It's the most stupid, stupid storyline that you could possibly tell, because pro wrestling is about one or two people fighting one or two people to win championships. That's why they're all there. That is the actual core of the entire narrative structure of why anybody gets into the stories told on a wrestling show. There is no way to keep score between Raw and SmackDown other than with ratings, which they're not doing, because that would be stupid to do too. And so you have them saying, yeah, that's what really matters most. So even though it looks like Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins are fighting for a championship and that's the ultimate, it's really just filling time until we can figure out if that match is good enough that fans like us better than what SmackDown offers 2 weeks later on pay-per-view. It's just so dumb. It doesn't just, you can have a roster split without this Raw versus SmackDown thing that the GMs and commissioners or whatever are paying lip service to, Travis. It's frustrating seeing something so nonsensical be talked about, and it doesn't seem like they'd think their audience will notice that this makes no sense. And Shane, not saying no, he doesn't watch Raw, by the way, is like a football coach. Okay, this is what I want to say, too, and then I'll throw it to you again. If you're going to go with this dumb, this stupid thing that where it's Raw versus SmackDown, let's just stipulate to that. Let's even pretend it makes sense. Then Shane is a complete buffoon and idiot. If that's really what's going on here, that nothing else matters but Raw versus SmackDown, the head coach of a football team is going to study tape of the other football team. If a football head coach says, oh, I don't pay attention to the other team, we're just going to play them on Sunday, they would be fired before they won or lost the game. And you got Shane bragging about it. I don't watch the competition, even though apparently that's the whole reason we're all doing everything that we do. All right, Travis.
Right, and Shane has to watch one show. A football head coach has to prepare for, you know, 10 teams or whatever it works out to be, but 16 different, you know, regular season games.
Yep.
So he's, you know, watching tape. Yeah, it's, the analogy totally works. Yeah, he would he'd never work again in the sport.
And all this stuff counts. It's not getting a "this is awesome" chant because two guys, nobody, that fans don't care if anybody wins or loses. They don't have strong emotional investment in it, but they're chanting "this is awesome." That is not what makes a successful pro wrestling company. It's not. And what makes a pro wrestling company is all.
That's the Dixie Carter book of success.
Yes, and look where it got.
And you know, I'm going to try to work in a weekly Dixie Carter shot, and that's like 2 weeks in a row. So yeah, no, that's totally. It's like, this is awesome. This is awesome. Hey, see, and fire Russo. That's the. I don't even know.
But yeah, won't have Dixie Carter to kick around much longer, but we'll see. Who knows? That is yet to be fully determined. All right, we have we've got a sponsor in this show called FanEssentials.net. How would you like to get all your favorite sports teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? Check out FanEssentials.net. All you do is pick your favorite sports team, and every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. They find the sports gear, so you don't have to stand in line at the arena and overpay for a limited selection. Each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear. It also makes a great gift idea for any sports fan. Prices start at $34.99. Visit FanEssentials.net. That's .net, FanEssentials.net, and use promo code PWTORCH at checkout to get 30% off your first month. A good deal gets 30% better when you use coupon code PWTORCH. That's FanEssentials.net. Coupon code PWTORCH. We're going to go to our bottom of the hour break here. A word about our main website, PWTORCH.com. And when we come back, more phone calls, more emails with Travis Bryant of the East Coast Cast. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile friendly, desktop and laptop friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with PWTorch.com. All right, we are back. I do want to mention Justin Roberts did, I think, only a second podcast interview since leaving WWE a few years ago. The first was with Jim Ross right after he left, and that was 3 weeks ago here at PWTorchLivecast.com. A lot of insight into inner workings of WWE from Justin Roberts, who spent over a decade there. I love getting perspectives from people who fulfill different roles in the wrestling company. And the ring announcer is a job where I haven't done a lot of interviews with ring announcers, especially those working for WWE and the life they live and how they're treated. Are they respected? Little quirky rules that I wouldn't have noticed, but now I think about every time I watch ring announcers on WWE, and some insight into the Triple H. The way Triple H as a person has evolved or not evolved as a leader in that company, and the dynamic between Triple H and Vince. Some really interesting stuff. Really good interview. 90 minutes of must-listen content. You can go to pwtorchlivecast.com and scroll to the interview section or click on the interviews category on our menu and download or stream that. And Kevin Nash, as I said last week, one of the most listened to interviews we have done this year. Check that out at pwtorchlivecast.com. Travis Bryant is my co-host today on the midweek edition of the PW Torch Livecast, and we're also taking your phone calls, and we're going to get to emails soon. I'm going to jump ahead and take what I believe is an international caller first, so his phone bill doesn't go too skyrocket high here. If you hear a beep, this is you. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, it's Vince from Finland. White Flame. Travis knows me.
White Flame, how's it going?
Excellent. Thanks for calling, Vince. What do you got for Travis and me?
Yeah, no problem. I got a question and a comment. My comments about Raw, and they finally done it. I've tuned out. I've not watched for 2 weeks, so thanks a lot, WWE. You've made my week a lot easier, and I had an analogy of what it's like. It's like, you know, quitting smoking, that you kind of miss it because it's cool, but you feel a lot better when you're not doing it. So, take a break from Raw. You'll feel better. I know you two can't do it, but any listeners feeling...
I can do what I want.
I can do what I want, too. I can assign somebody else coverage of Raw and fake my way through, but I'm not going to do it. That's not... I can do it, but I'm definitely not going to do it. I do want to know, Vince, what was... Was there a singular break point, or really was it just, you know, you just felt...
The final straw, I started watching last week, and I watched the first segment with the women, and I was just like, this is a jumbled mess, the women. And I do listen to your recaps, and I listen to all your shows, so I know what's going on. And it just seems they have no idea what to do with the women. And, like, Rusev is the only respectable champion on that show. Like, everything else is just, like, backstage politics, and we can't make up our mind. I was just like, you know what, SmackDown is a clear show. They have competition, the GMs get out of the way, you know, it's just easier to watch, and that's what I want from my wrestling, so I did it. Like, no more Raw for me, and I'll check back, you know, I'm not going to watch the pay-per-view, because I don't, why should I? I'm going to listen to you guys, and when it gets better, maybe I'll get back in, but, you know, go, sure. I'm with Bruce, I'm Team Blue.
No, that's what more wrestling fans really should have the guts to do, and I say it's guts because it takes, you know, guts to not do something that you typically like and you're so in the habit of doing. I mean, we're the only. I mean, there's no other. You can't find like an industry or an entertainment genre that. Abuses its fans and takes them for granted and insults their intelligence as frequently and consistently as pro wrestling, and specifically the mainstream stuff, WWE, obviously the last 15 years. But we take it, and I'm in that category too. You know, I had my break with TNA, you know, but you know, the good stuff that primo, you know, I can't break hold from. Or at least not on any sustained basis. I'll do what Vince does and take off a little bit, but I always come back, and we always do. Or less and less now, you know, 1.89 or whatever.
You were just talking about the rivalry thing that Stephanie's goal is to destroy. So the idea is that there's just going to be one show. So, you know, yeah, I'm good for that. You know, if that's what they want to do, then, you know, destroy one of the shows. Yeah, let's just have one SmackDown on Tuesdays. You know, I'll be fine. That's what they want to do.
Vince,
it seems to be the storyline anyway that they... quickly want to talk about Talking Smack, and it was more a question Travis kind of addressed it on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, but I wanted to ask you personally, is there any chance that maybe you would kind of watch the Talking Smack show also and then do your SmackDown post-game show? Because it seems to be quite a newsworthy show. That was just a question. Maybe you can think about it for 4 weeks or whatever, but just something to...
Yeah, I mean, my inclination is no.
That's for you, Wade.
Yeah, and my inclination is no. I mean, I think that as much as it's a newsworthy show, I think that the majority of people who watch SmackDown are not flipping immediately to Talking Smack. Maybe among our audience, it's a high percentage, but I like the energy of doing a show live as soon as the main show goes off the air. Yes, it's newsworthy, but I think that, you know, we can have, as we did yesterday, somebody call mid-show and kind of let us know what happened with it. The majority of our listeners listen on demand on a delay basis anyway, and so just scheduling-wise, I guess I'd rather just, you know, on that adrenaline of the show's off the air and here I am immediately talking. I think even for people listening on demand, it adds a little bit of a different kind of energy to the show than if we've had even a half hour to reflect on it. I still lean that way. I mean, I understand the argument, and I've had some people request Talking Smack is good enough, but Talking Smack is a half hour of people sitting and talking about wrestling, and yes, there's moments here and there that are newsworthy, and we certainly want to cover those newsworthy aspects, but I still lean towards going on, doing the wrap-up of the main body of the show right after that show ends. I think it's been a fun change for me compared to how it has been done.
I do like the idea that somebody just calls in and then just gives like two sentences. So I didn't listen to the SmackDown show. I'm going to do that now. So, but yeah, that seems like a fun idea that maybe somebody just pops in and says, "Hey, you know, this happened." And then
Yeah,
that's more than enough. Like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. It's really appreciate your call and your comments.
Okay, thanks.
You bet.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fact is we are on the show after Talking Smack. We're just a half hour into the show, but we're not only a half hour show. So, you know, people can join if they want to watch Talking Smack and still listen to us live. They can certainly do that. But for those listening on demand, as long as we figure out how to get a mid show update on what was newsworthy on that talk show, I like the current format. Travis, we've got an email question from Richard from Wolverhampton, England. He says, "I've been a VIP member for 5 months now, and it's one of the best decisions I have made. I enjoy The Fix with Todd Martin." Thank you. I'll be recording The Fix with Todd Martin for VIP members in, it's just past about 4 hours from now, less than 4 hours from now. So that'll go up tonight, usually about 2 hours. Really good conversation with Todd every week about wrestling. And you have to kind of hear the show to understand why it is as popular as it is with VIP members, but Todd does a great job bringing a very strong point of view and a big knowledge base to what he does every week for VIP members.
He was way too harsh on the Mickey intro song last week.
I got to pick my battles with Todd, but you're right, Travis. You know what? It's an age. I would say it was an age thing, but you and Todd are about the same age. So, I was sort of like, I grew up with that being, I wouldn't say a cool song, but an ironically cool song.
Oh, yeah. Right there with you.
Yeah. All right, Richard says, "My question relates to Chris Jericho. Do you think that his run has been his best so far? I do believe he is the best heel in the company at the moment. I'm always intrigued by his segments. And who do you think Brock's next opponent will be? As since SummerSlam, it's gone quite quiet. And since the split, I enjoy SmackDown a lot more. The Talking Smack show does bring another dimension. Raw just seems predictable, and the whole Stephanie Triple H thing." Thanks. Jericho and Brock. Travis.
No idea if it's not Orton, like who they plug in for as Brock's opponent. Really would just be speculating. I don't want to sit here and stammer while I try to think of someone. But Jericho, I don't know if I go as far as say he's the best heel. He's, I said a week ago, I wish he'd tone down the goofiness, like don't take the idiot stuff that far. Like, he's really going far with that, and, you know, the list and his scarf and the limp wrist and the, you know, just, I mean, I don't think this is his best run. His best run was from 08 to 11 or 10. I thought that was one of those things that was, you know, just universally accepted that was Chris Jericho's best run, but maybe that's just me. Him now, I mean, he's good. I really like him, but I don't think he's the best.
What'd you think of this week's segment he did?
And I don't think he's having it.
The Jericho list.
The list, it was okay. It was cute, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm...
Yeah, I'm just not a fan of cute for, you know, cute Jericho in 97 was, you know, fine. Cute Jericho in 03 even. You know, but... You know, cute Jericho with crow's feet. It's like, come on, just be a guy that wants to punch people in the face.
I'm higher on him now than you are.
And I don't.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think there's things.
And that's my guy. Like, I grew up. Like, Jericho's one of my favorite wrestlers for a very long time.
I like
number one for a decade almost.
I like Jericho and what he does now a lot, but I also have to concede that. The criticism, or there's some mitigating factors, and what I don't want, and I think he's slid into this territory a little more in recent weeks, even amidst genius work in other ways, and I will use that term. I think there's things that he has done in this run that are in a wrestling context genius, but I also think he's sliding into a little too much of a parody. Or, like, he just doesn't care anymore, and it's sort of like almost, you know, Matt Hardy territory and what he's doing in TNA, where it's sort of a spoof. And I want there to still be a sense that there's an edge to him, and that he still, like, actually wants to win matches. He still has professional aspirations, and not that he's now just maybe getting a little too self-indulgent in the crazy elder statesman mode. And I do think that it's something he needs to, you know, probably assess and maybe pull back a little bit on some of the mannerisms and aspects of what he's doing, so he doesn't just become kind of, you know, like, you know, growing up, if you grew up seeing Cactus Jack on the indie scene or in Dallas, Texas, and World Class doing the running elbow and WCW and then ECW, and you see him a certain way. And then Mankind even had that aspect to him. And then all of a sudden it's like Dude Love, and it's shucks, Mick Foley, dropping the name of the city in a double ironic with a twist way, you know, self-referential, self-deprecation shtick. And it got a little too syrupy and cutesy, and you're like, God, there was such a sharp guy who, you know, those promos that he cut in ECW on hardcore fans at the time stand the test of time. And you wanted to see some of that still there, and I do think Jericho is headed in a direction where he's leaving a little too much of the old Jericho behind. I still am a fan of the character, but yeah, I think it's a worthy discussion to maybe check it a little bit and rein it back in a little bit, so he can still be somebody fans take seriously when he's actually in the ring. So.
Yeah, I actually agree with most of that. I wouldn't go as far as to even insinuate that he's gotten to the point where he doesn't care, because I think it's the content is still good. Like it's quality stuff. Like that person that doesn't care isn't making thought is going into that. It's just silly.
Let me clarify, you know, Travis. When I say he doesn't care, what I mean is that the character Jericho doesn't care about winning matches anymore. I don't know how I put it, but that's certainly what I would say is where I'm coming from. Like, you want it to seem like Chris Jericho, the wrestler on the air, isn't just in La La Land, that he still has some actual concrete goals that involve wanting to win matches and not just float around as the eccentric elder statesman of the roster.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right. Another email. Let's do this. Doug from New York City. He says, Monday on Raw, Rollins and Rusev had a post-match interaction on the stage that ended in Rollins diving off the announce table for a somewhat soft-looking landing on the Bulgarian Brute. I couldn't help but think that if this was the Attitude Era, there almost certainly would have been a steel chair involved to add credibility to the fight. Can you guys comment a bit on the cartoonish PG style, which involves dangerous high-flying in lieu of old-school tactics like color and weaponry? Are guys like Rollins forced to do high-risk maneuvers to compensate? Was Smith Hart right in accusing Rollins of doing dangerous moves that look fake? Does Seth have any other option? Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work. Interesting question, Travis, on kind of a broad style question about this era and then specifically about Seth. Your thoughts on that?
Wait. How can you at the same time call a move soft and dangerous?
I think that's what's interesting about that point of view is you can do a move that ultimately looks like it didn't hurt the opponent, but if something goes wrong, you can get hurt. That's what I think they're getting at.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as high spots go, unless we're talking, I mean, we've seen like the ring or the announce table collapse, something like that, sure. But outside of a loose, you know, screw and something freakish happen, a freak accident, that's as safe a high spot as you can get. I mean, to the point where you called it soft. I mean, it was fine. I mean, I just went... They sold it, like, no, don't do it, don't do it. He did it, and then Seth sold it. It hurt his stomach, and Rusev sold it. So I was like, well, okay, whatever. Fine with me. Better than the guy snapping his arm or doing something stupid. Yeah. I mean, it was sold. I mean, Rusev didn't pop up. What a weird argument.
Yeah. Okay, with the time we got left, I want to get another caller two and another email or two in. So let's go fast through this one. VIP member Chris from Ann Arbor just emailed. He says, I'm having a hard time understanding why WWE would consider bringing Hogan back. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I recall you saying that when WWE most recently distanced themselves from him, that it was no major loss because his value was not that high to begin with. The risk simply did not outweigh the reward. Am I to now assume there really is a ton of money to be made in using this jerk? Travis, where are you? Where do you stand on, you know, because the injection of Hulk Hogan's voice and highlights has some people, had people thinking he might be brought back, and now there's talk of maybe getting him back, having him come back in time for WrestleMania 33. I think those rumors are going to be around because of his history with WWE, no matter what. But anytime there's even a little clue out there or a little droplet of them seeming to test the water, so to speak, because of his history in this industry, deservedly so, people are going to speculate and wonder, where do you stand on this? Is he someone who the risk is too great?
I don't think there's necessarily this money to be made with Hulk Hogan right now or in the foreseeable future. I don't think the risk of bringing him back in any capacity on air or even as I saw, I heard someone talking about, I don't know if it was a caller or something doing the JBL type stuff. Even that, I don't think it's worth WWE because that's not going to make them any money. Maybe some people, you know, if you play that right after Raw, might go over and watch that, but so what? You know, I don't think they're not going to sign up for the network, probably, because it's JBL, not Cenk Uygur or somebody that's going to actually, a journalist that's actually going to, you know, hold his feet to the fire and ask follow-up questions and things like that. But his voice being on stuff, and he absolutely should not be erased or attempted to be erased from history. He shouldn't. I mean, he's a bigot and things, but and as we find out more and more as days go by, a lot of people are bigots. They expose themselves every day on Twitter and on everywhere. I mean, you can't go erasing people from society because they have, you know, issues of possible hatred and things like that, or however, you know, maybe if I don't want to go that far, but whatever. No, so his voice and his images being on things, like, well, that happened. that footage exists.
Right.
That shouldn't be, you know, blurred over or edited out. That's absurd. He didn't murder his family and kill himself.
And that's where I kind of draw or think that there's two different debates. And one, I'm one, I just think, of course, Hulk Hogan existed. That footage is there. You don't have to go out of your way to celebrate his history, but you need to, when it's called for, acknowledge his history and incorporate it into, you know, anything you do on the history of WWE and the big champions and big main eventers. I mean, you can't exclude it. I don't think you ought to, based on what he did. I feel strongly, though, that they need to consider whether it's worth ever giving him another substantial payday, because I think the things that he said in the context that he said them, it's not just uttering the N-word. Like, people, a lot of people say that in the heat of the moment. It's like, yes, that's a big deal. But even take that away, and let's say he didn't say the N-word,
right,
the context of how he spoke about African-Americans on more than one occasion is so disqualifying
to
being a mainstream celebrity. Oh, I'm sorry, Travis, go ahead.
Yeah, the jailhouse conversation with Nick that you bring up that no one talks about is a perfect example. And I think I'd go a step further, is because if you read Nick's side, I think Nick's ashamed because Nick won't say it. Maybe because he doesn't want to get his ass kicked because he's in jail and who knows who's next to him on that phone, on that thing. But he won't say it. He's ashamed, and it's like, Dad, yeah, and they'll say a version. I mean, it was so weird and so creepy that Hogan was trying to press him to say that, and Nick wasn't having it. But yeah, that never gets talked about. So I mean, it's very clear and obvious that, what Hogan has inside of him and stuff, and it comes down to, he just shouldn't be paid to be anybody's spokesman or celebrity announcer or whatever. Anymore.
I just think there's certain things that you do.
Or at least with WWE.
Yeah, there's certain things you say publicly that disqualify you from certain privileged, high-profile jobs. I mean, there are certain things that you do and say that shouldn't cause you to be ostracized from society forever, but I think it disqualifies you from being celebrated as this heroic icon and idol for children for generations, and now we have this warm, fuzzy nostalgia for Hulk Hogan. Okay, you can have nostalgia for Hulk Hogan. I'm not saying don't have that. If you want to do that, you want to ignore this chapter, and you want to compartmentalize, that's fine, but don't make an argument that WWE should also add to this guy's bank account and put their reputation on the line by continuing to celebrate him as a person with more public appearances and big paydays. I think you can acknowledge objectively his contributions and his history without overtly bringing him back and paying him money and essentially endorsing him. I think they need to think long and hard about that, because I think there could be a backlash, and I also just think it's kind of wrong on a personal level. I just think he's disqualified himself from it.
What's long and hard, Paul? But to think about, you just go, yeah, no, that's not happening.
Okay.
It's short of it.
Thank you.
It's not even something that you need to really put too much thought into.
Absolutely. All right, 718, you've been on a whole long time. Let's go to you as promised. Thank you for holding. Please state your name and the city you're calling.
This is Mike from Brooklyn. How you doing, Wade and Trey?
Doing good, Mike. What do you got for us?
Mike. I'm gonna get to talk to you twice today. I assume.
Oh, that's a definite. He's so sad. 6:30 Eastern time. First of all, I just want to get y'all's assessment of if Anderson and Gallows don't win the titles on Sunday, is it pretty much like, where do they go for this? Do y'all think it's over? That's my first thing. My second thing is TNA related.
Say it quick, because we got tons of background.
I think they are going to win.
Hold on, Travis. Hold on. I want Mike to say a second topic, and if callers, when they do call, can isolate themselves from tons of background noise, it's a courtesy to all the listeners.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah. Tremendously.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, my second question is, was being, reported and going around is that this dude, Big Billy Corgan, he pretty much got almost to the Bound for Glory pay-per-view to actually, buy the company. And if that doesn't happen in time, do y'all see, maybe WWE probably trying to swoop in and scoop the company, you know, up from under. And that's all I got from that.
All right, cool. Good topic. I mean, we've done reporting on this. There'll be more. There's good reporting at PWTorch.com. James Caldwell and Sean Radican have been on this story. So if you're calling our show and asking us about this story and you haven't read our reports on PWTorch.com, I encourage you to do so because we've got good exclusive sourced info on what is going on here and where WWE would fit in. WWE is not a serious buyer that's going to pay top dollar because there's nothing to buy other than a tape library, which is of, you know, value in a completist sense. If they just want, you know, glorious Robert Roode's history and AJ Styles' magnificent history in TNA, I mean, that's nice for you know, documentaries and stuff. But they're not buying anything. This is the thing. There's nothing to buy. There's nothing. TNA doesn't exist as anything. All they do is call up some wrestlers and say, go to this building, and then they film them. And then they put it on television. That's it. There's some international TV deals that mean almost nothing, if nothing, to WWE because they would have to be – they'd be conflicts of interest. It'd be duplicitous. TNA doesn't exist. It is a copyright and it is a trademark, TNA, that has negative value, not positive. So buying TNA should actually require a discount because they were dumb enough for 15 years almost to keep the name – TNA as their company name. You're not. You have to think about this. What would any? I mean, I hate to undercut this note. There's some for somebody smaller, who's, you know, like if a TV station says we can do something with this, but we don't know where to begin. And there's an infrastructure here. There's a writing team. There's backstory. There's a tape library. There's 300,000 people who watch this. That gives us more than zero to start with. It has nominal value, but you're not actually buying an asset. You're buying something that makes almost no money and is not sustainable in its current model. So this idea that somebody's going to cash in an ownership position in TNA is crazy unless there's somebody just, you know, who has money to burn and decides they just want a plaything or have a strategy to turn it around. But even then, you can start from scratch for a relatively small amount of money compared to what you'd be getting from TNA. So, I don't know. Am I too harsh, Travis, in my assessment of what is for sale?
I don't think so. I don't... You would have much more knowledge of that than me. It sounds like it. That sounds like TNA to me. Like, just a bunch of surface stuff, but no real, no real body to it. So,
I mean, when you buy a company, when you buy a company, you're buying the brand, you're buying the inertia of a customer base spending money on a product, as opposed to spending their money on other products or other things, and you're buying the staff, you're buying all the time it takes to create a team of employees and contractors and relationships. That's what you're buying when you buy a company. And so you're buying almost nothing with TNA when you talk about that. It isn't known for its great front office staff. It's not known for growing. It's known for the audience going down and down and down over time. And it's not known for making money for anybody. You know, I mean, well, a few people along the way, you know, some cast-offs from WCW and that kind of thing. But there's just the typical things that give something value that you would spend money on if you're an outside party are limited, greatly limited. There's not a lot that you're buying. And in fact, the first thing I would do if I bought TNA is change the name of the damn company. And then I think a lot of people would say you would do a house cleaning in the front office. And then it comes down to, okay, so you're buying Billy Corgan's leadership, if he's going to stick around and be the leader. And I would say there's some reasons to think there's value there. But there's some, you know, criticism of some of his decisions and the way he operates too. So, yeah, it's a weird topic to me because I think people just think, well, it's a number two company, they've been around a long time, and wow. And I mean, this idea that, you know, that it would be a big deal if WWE bought them, it wouldn't be a big deal to WWE if they bought them because they're not dumb enough to spend very much money on it at all, and they're just going to be buying a tape library, and they're going to be shutting down every other aspect of it such as it exists. So this isn't, to me, that big of a story. It's just either they're going to find a third party to give them some more funding so they can try to stay relevant and maybe grow. And that's good for them if they do it. But this is not a big deal. People, they're not employing very many, if any, wrestlers on any kind of a full-time living basis. If TNA goes away tomorrow, it just doesn't affect the wrestling industry all that much. It's sad to say. I've spent lots and lots and lots of hours for more than a dozen years following and covering and watching this company. But if they go away tomorrow, it means almost nothing in terms of employing people or developing new talent or creating a place of employment. Every couple months, a handful of guys get a payday for a couple indie day paydays. That's all they are right now. So, yeah. Anderson and Gallows, Travis, what's the state?
Yeah, they're not. They're going to win the title. I think New Day, they're going to, in the rain, there's not a ton more they can get out of. It would be probably a little more fun and change up to have them in a different mode. If they have a different damn mode, because I saw them get, you know, one guy get his nuts squashed and they didn't seem to care a ton, or at least enough to be pissed off for more than 38 seconds. But yeah, just in chase mode and just not being your WWE, maybe not having all that and being all that can just interject something into that feud, because it certainly needs it, because there is no other feud. That is the tag division.
Yeah, I know.
New Day and Gallows and Anderson.
On a 1 to 10 scale.
I mean, unless I'm missing another tag team on Raw.
On a 1 to 10 scale, Travis, what's the highest you've been on New Day as an act? What's the lowest number, and where are you now?
Highest? I've been, really extreme. I've been at, 9 or 10, and I've been pretty low, 2 or 3 with them. And now I'm just right in the middle, 5 or 6. You know, they're just kind of New Day. They do their thing.
Yeah, I think they lost some credibility as an act when things got serious with the Wyatt family and things got serious with Anderson and Gallows, and Kofi Kingston couldn't keep a serious face for more than 8 seconds before they got to, you know, cutesy stuff again. And I just think the audience, whether they're processing it at a real conscious level or not, because that's not necessarily important to how you have impressions of people in life and in entertainment. Sometimes it's just a vibe you get because you don't think that hard about it. And in fact, if wrestling companies are doing their job, that should be how you react when you are invested in an act. You're not processing it and thinking, should I like this person? And here is a checklist of reasons why. It's just a guttural emotional reaction you have to them. I think New Day cost themselves big time with their audience and defined themselves down when things got serious and they didn't get serious. And I think that people looked at them and said, all right, they're fun and they like to have fun and they goof off, but when times are serious, they can step up to the plate and be serious. And they just didn't show that side or that discipline or that inclination. And I think it hurt them. I think it defined them as Santino. And it took away what could have been a transformational moment where people still liked them when they were entertaining, but they respected them because they knew when it was time to be serious. And I think the act lost something in the last couple months because of that. All right. Travis, do you have a couple more minutes? We got a couple more calls. Or do you got to run?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's do it.
No.
I know you'll be doing several hours of audio later, so I don't want to
several.
Yes. All right. Let's try 562. You're up next. 562. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Wade Keller. It's Ruben J from Los Angeles. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for calling, Ruben. What have you got for us today?
Hey, it seemed like WWE listened to your whole Wade Keller hotline about the Cruiserweight division and decided to do the complete opposite of everything you suggested.
I know.
You probably thought of the Cruiserweight division already, but I wanted to know, like, what do you think they should do with, after this, obviously, this integration of them into the main roster, do you think they should add some other people from Raw other than the people that were on, in the Cruiserweight Classic, or should it just be these, 6-7 guys they have signed for that? And then secondly, I heard you guys talking about the TNA buyout. I just wanted to get your opinion on the numbers that are being thrown out about how much TNA is worth. I've heard upwards of $40 million, and I've heard like $2 million. I just wanted your opinion on that as well.
If somebody pays $40 million for TNA, then the Pro Wrestling Torch is worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $600 billion. I mean, come on. It's just, who, what are you buying?
Even
I want to
million.
Know. I want to know what somebody who would pay. I mean, again, if this is just some writer saying, well, this was what WCW and this is what. I mean, I want someone to tell me what you're buying. You're buying. And I don't want this to be like this anti-TNA rant because it's not. I'm rooted for them. I've complimented some of the good decisions they made. I think that they've been in survival mode effectively for a while, that they put a TV show on the air. On a budget that works. Now, sometimes they get a TV show on the air because they don't pay the frickin' workers who actually make the show possible. And I think there's character issue there. And that's been an ongoing issue, and that's something that I think is really bad for reputation, and you pay a price for that in other ways, intangibly, in a long way, in terms of, you know, people giving you a break and respecting you. But, I mean, it's what you're buying when you buy TNA is equated in two things. How much would it cost you to recreate from scratch what you're getting if you suddenly get the keys to TNA? And that involves hiring a couple dozen people who are as competent at their jobs as TNA's office staff, and hiring a lawyer to trademark a name better than TNA, and hiring someone to design a logo. And then you go to a TV station and you say, we're going to run a TV taping and we'd like you to air the show starting the week after TNA goes off the air. Would you air us at the same time a week later with our new name and our new staff? And, oh, yeah, a bunch of wrestlers who are looking for work who are free agents who have been doing your TV tapings are now available to us. And if not, we'll go hire some other free agents who are out there. That's it. And then the only thing you lose is the ability to talk about the tenth annual pay-per-view, you know, or the 13th annual Bound for Glory. Or you don't get to refer to your history if you don't buy it. But that's nice, but it's not a difference maker money-wise. So that's it. And then some TV deals internationally, you know. And so you have to add that all up. And if there's money coming in internationally that's substantial – and it's multi-year deals, and it took a lot of work to get them, and that's what's keeping the company afloat, then yeah, that you do the math on that. But otherwise, the company consists of a trademark, a logo, an office staff who has phone numbers or Facebook friendships with some wrestlers where you can message them online, and a telephone to call an arena and book it, and the ability to hire a camera crew. I mean, that's what TNA is. There's not anything else to buy. So it's just silly when someone throws out tens of millions of dollars that they're worth. I just don't get it. If somebody thinks I'm wrong and I'm missing something on how these deals are made, drop me an email, kellerwade@gmail.com. I will listen. But there's nothing to buy. I'm exaggerating slightly. There's almost nothing to buy. Certainly nothing worth that much. But I don't want to belabor that point. Anything else that Ruben J had to say, Travis, that you want to respond to?
Yeah, if TNA is worth $40 million, Global Force Wrestling's got to be worth like $5 million, right?
Right, yeah. Because they are basically what I just described. A logo, a website, and a cell phone where you can call people and tell them, hey, would you show up for this much money at this building? I mean, that's all a wrestling company is when it gets down to it. It's not a fact. Like, you're not buying a factory. Like, if you buy Mazda, you're buying their factory. You're buying their blueprints, their technology. If you buy a cell phone company, you're buying a factory and business relationships and engineers and a whole – but, I mean, that takes a lot of work to assemble, you know, and you're actually buying tangible things. They might own a building, you know, a headquarters. You're buying that. That's not TNA. It doesn't apply to them. So, all right, 320. Yep. State your name and where you're calling from.
I'm Carl from the unhappy town of St. Cloud, Minnesota right now.
Oh, yeah.
And I just had a couple questions for you.
Sure, go ahead, Carl.
My first thing is John Cena losing cleanly twice in his last two singles matches. Has that ever happened to him since he's been a champion? Do you remember?
I mean, I don't keep meticulous track of that, but it did jump out to me, Travis, that it felt like a newsworthy moment, losing to AJ and then getting pinned by Dean. Your reaction to what they're doing with Cena and the stat Carl brings up?
The newsworthy moment was how fast John Cena got the hell out of that ring after he took that three count. I mean, he rolled, you know, got out of there, and you never saw him again, ever. It was, it stood out to me. I wasn't looking for it. I just saw it like, whoa, he's out. Yeah, that's something to talk about. That's John Cena taking, yeah, three straight singles or two straight, whatever. But still, you know, losing clean is not something Cena does. And to do it twice in recent memory, or yeah, at least weeks apart, is yeah, something to talk about for sure.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you're, you know, you're a lazy part-timer. You know, you lose your edge.
A guy named Rich Travis just messaged us with a list of all the John Cena losses since 2005. So we've got some stats that we can actually refer to.
Rich.
Some hard data here.
Rich.
All right, Carl. Anything else for us?
I did have one quick thing. I don't know if you heard Kevin Kelly yesterday on Taz's show saying that, you know, hopefully they can work towards some more WWE, you know, Ring of Honor, maybe NXT stuff. What do you think besides the Elite versus the New Day would be a good maybe crossover?
What, Kevin Kelly's talking about what? I didn't hear the show.
He just said that there were, you know, hopefully they can work towards some more WWE and NXT and ROH, you know, cooperation and stuff, because it's been better, you know, with the New Day, Elite stuff teased and just stuff like that.
Okay.
Hopefully they can work towards working together because it's better for the business.
I can maybe see that. It might be better for the business. I think ROH stands to benefit from looking like they're not Smoky Mountain Wrestling and their dying days, where they needed to bring in the real big stars to prop them up. Which, you know, is one of the things that ultimately hurt Jim Cornette. You know, if Undertaker appears on a show, a Smoky Mountain Wrestling show, it's hard to draw people the next month when he's not around, because your fan base just looks at them as a big stars and they're going to be protected. I don't see much value, to be honest, in Ring of Honor cooperating at all with WWE. I think it's this idea that fans are clamoring for interpromotional matches. I just do not buy that. I think it's not 1983. Where there's all these successful established territories and there's all these dream matches. I think ROH fans want ROH to be what ECW once stood for, which is we stand for something different. We're even though they're owned by a corporation, we're not corporate, ha-ha, comedy skit, Vince McMahon vision wrestling. You want to establish that you're different, and that when you go to an ROH show, you're making an anti-WWE statement. And WWE doesn't need NXT. They've got their NXT and Evolve and the pocketbook to hire people from all over the world. Honestly, I just think that's a dated, antiquated notion. Travis, your thoughts on any kind of ROH, NXT, WWE alliance? Are there short-term and long-term positives for anybody?
I just don't see why it would make any sense to do that. Like, who does that benefit? It's all kinds of conflicts, Sinclair and this. I don't think they would appreciate that. I mean, it's just, no. Why is it being talked about? Did something like someone say something? Or he said something about Kevin Kelly.
Yeah,
I was kind of reading this, John Cena.
It, so. Yeah, I mean, I just...
Losing clean list.
I would recommend Ring of Honor not do it unless they are trying to give the impression to their fans that we're just subservient. We're a subservient minor league that is just begging for the big dog to give us some attention and maybe let us borrow one of their wrestlers. I think it's a dumb move for them. I think it totally conflicts with the core of their identity, which is we're not WWE. We're independent. Take pride in that. You when you walk around wearing an ROH t-shirt, it's because we wouldn't let a WWE wrestler on our show because we stand for something different than that. And when a wrestler leaves ROH, you know, okay, it's great. You know, if a guy is a big star in ROH and succeeds in WWE, but of course they succeed because we have the best wrestlers and we always do. Of course they rise to the top, and the best wrestlers in the business today are still here. And and Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and the Briscoes would kick the ass of any of WWE's top guys right now because they're in their prime. And ROH features the best WWE wrestlers of tomorrow, but they're in their prime today at reasonable prices on better shows. That's ROH's marketing. Not, oh, please send us New Day. That'd be so cool. Carl, anything else?
No, I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's a very good point.
Cool. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Ruben Jake, Travis brought up cruiserweight division. What do you grade week one on Raw?
C minus.
That's so generous.
And I only give them a C because they had a good match.
Yeah.
Even though it was a match that I didn't want to see or didn't think was appropriate for the what you're trying to do. But it was good, so I get to see. But the whole thing, and I'm not even talking about it. Just, I guess Foley stumbling over his wording was an indicator of how this was going to go. But it's just, the thrills and chills and spills and, these athletes and the heart and the gusto and the... At least they established a heel in Brian Kendrick. I guess that's, another reason they get somewhat of a C. Like, they could firmly establish that he's just... And that really hurts because, man, what could have been, just thinking about Bruce's suggestion from 2 weeks ago. But, yeah, C-minus for the Cruiserweights on Raw. And no TJP after they told us seven guys were going to show up for. Not that you needed seven guys to show up, but you said it, so... the stuff's changing. You'd wish they just had a firm grasp on what the hell was going on day to day.
Small victories, Travis.
And things like that, tweeting out seven guys are going to be on and then four show up and it's not not even a champion. Like, what? Go ahead.
Small victories. Stephanie McMahon did not stand in high heels a foot taller than seven cruiserweights on Monday Night Raw. I mean, at least that didn't happen.
Small picture.
Ugh. I mean, I'm not going to rant.
90
I've
seconds.
Made it clear.
Not yet.
I made it clear yesterday. And Monday night on the Wade Keller Hotline, Monday night with Joel Dennell on the live cast, post-Raw live cast, but even more so Monday night on the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members. I think I talked about it again. I certainly wrote about it in this week's Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter on the back page in my EndNotes editorial. I think they did everything that everybody ever does wrong with the Cruiserweights, and I bet that they're proud of themselves and think that they did the obvious right thing to do. I don't even think it crosses their mind or is... The what they did wrong. I mean, they see them as a bunch of little guys who are going to provide exciting moves because apparently there are some fans out there who like that, and we're supposed to do this. That's what Monday was. It wasn't. It just was all wrong. So, but again, I'm tempering my potential revved up rant. I've done it enough this week and wrote about it on notes, so I'll leave it on that note. Thanks to all our callers, Travis. Thanks for the last hour and a half. East Coast cast tonight. Check that out. I'll be by tomorrow with Mick Karsh, one of the longest tenured wrestling announcers in the industry. Wore a lot of hats and he's always a great guest on the show. Follows the wrestling scene today, has strong points of view. Great announcer voice. Just tune in to hear Mick's voice. He knows how announcing is supposed to work. He is so underrated and underappreciated, people who know him appreciate his work, but a lot of people don't because of the places that he's announced hasn't always landed on a lot of people's radar. But he'll be with me, and it should be a really good hour. So join us then tomorrow, 1 Eastern, for PW Torch Livecast Interview Thursday. Travis will be back on Friday with Bruce Mitchell for the Friday primetime edition of the Livecast at 7 Eastern. And then Bruce Pritchard, Brother Love, joins Jim Valley for Saturday Morning Wrestling at 11:30 Eastern. On Saturday morning, the nostalgia-themed livecast, and then James Caldwell hosting the post-Clash of Champions livecast at 11:30 coming up this Sunday. So a lot of good stuff coming up. Go check out our Kevin Ash interview, our Justin Roberts interview, and more in the archives over at pwtorchlivecast.com. Travis, thanks again.
Thanks, Wade.
You bet. Don't forget, we got a sponsor of the show also called Loot Crate. And you can save money if you're interested in getting a crate of cool stuff delivered to your doorstep every month for less than $20 a month. In fact, you get 6 to 8 items. That includes licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. And for less than $20 a month, you can get 6 to 8 items delivered to your doorstep. Check out lootcrate.com. Enter coupon code PWTORCH to save $3. Loot Crate, it guarantees $40+ in retail value in every crate, sometimes a lot more. Every month, there's a different theme, and themes are curated around, or items are curated around that theme, such as Marvel, Star Wars, The Legend of Zelda, The Walking Dead, and many more. Go check out their website, lootcrate.com. And remember, if you decide to subscribe, you get $3 off any new subscription by using PWTORCH. And that discount also applies to a WWE's crate. They now have a WWE fan crate. And you just choose from the menu of crates at the homepage and select that and save $3 with coupon code PWTORCH. Check out MMA Torch for live coverage this coming Saturday night of the UFC Fight Night on Fox Sports. And every day, there's content at MMA Torch you won't find anywhere else. Exclusive columns, features, trivia, flashbacks, breaking news, analysis, columns, and more. If you're a UFC fan, you should be checking out MMATorch.com every single day. Bookmark it, keep a tab open on your mobile web browser or on your laptop browser. Hit refresh and check us out. A lot of good writers, a lot of good new features. Absolutely worth your time. If you're a UFC fan, you'll enjoy the sport more following it through MMA Torch. We talked about the VIP membership. Here's some details on that. As we wrap up today's show, we'd love to have you as a member. The majority of my podcasting, I do over 60 podcasts a month, and the majority of them are VIP exclusive. Bruce Mitchell with the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, Travis Bryant with The Fix, post pay-per-view roundtables. I host all of them, along with the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, and we've got a lot of other shows. And now we're going to be aiming for weekly retro radio shows, Pro Wrestling Spotlight, Total Chaos Radio. We're going to be aiming to get one up per week starting this fall, starting this week, in fact, and just so much more comes with a membership. Here's details on that. We'd love to have you sign up. We think you will not look back. And as others have testified, even during this very show, it is the best decision they have made in their entire lives. In their entire lives. Here's details on the best decision you could ever make in your entire life. I'm not exaggerating, really. Here we go. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host 3 other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost 3 decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.